He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you on this Tuesday. We're recording a little early in the week. Got some things going on the next couple days, so we're getting this one out early as we get ready for the Tour Championship, the final event of the season, Taylor. The PGA Tour season almost coming to an end. It's kind of sad. We're almost done with golf for the 2019-2020 PGA Tour season. I don't know what we're going to do after this week.
I don't either. We only have to wait a whole 13 or 10 days after that, however long it is, for a major championship, U.S. Open.
Yeah, I guess it'll be 10 because we're not finishing till Monday.
That's a very good point. Yeah, Labor Day, for sure. And so, yeah, I mean, it's normally we're after this, we're waiting for the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup, whichever it may be. And for a lot of even real golf fans, and especially the casual fans, this is about when football season starts for a lot of people. So They're not going to be into golf. And we still got NBA playoffs going on. Football's about to kick
Thunder
off.
Thunder up, baby. Game 7. Let's go.
And so we're all pumped up here in OKC, and I mean, the sports world is just crazy, and it's so unique because, like you said, Colby, this is the end of a season, but yet we got so much golf in the next couple months. Had some big news come out about where the Zozo is going to be held at. So, I mean, like I said, until the end of the year, and then even starting at Kapalua in 2021, it's going to be one hell of a stretch of golf.
Yeah, let's just start with Zozo. We got plenty of time to get to the Tour Championship today. The Zozo Championship will be moving to Sherwood this year, and then hopes to return to Japan in 2021, assuming that, you know, vaccine, whatever the case may be, COVID, assuming it's safe, it will return to Japan in 2021 if it can. But as it stands, it will go on at Sherwood Country Club October 22nd through the 25th. So yeah, Tiger Woods will be the defending champion of the Zozo Championship, which he won in Japan for his 82nd tour win at Sherwood Country Club, where you mentioned before we turned on the recording here and started the show, used to be where he hosted his event. So pretty good chance that is where we will see Tiger in between the U.S. Open and the Masters.
Yeah, I think it would be a shock to, honestly, everyone, unless there's a health health concern out there that comes out after the U.S. Open or before, whatever it may be. But as long as his health is fine, I don't see any way that he doesn't play. And because, from my understanding, I don't think that they changed venues for his tournament because of a disagreement with Sherwood or anything like that. So unless there's bad blood that he has with the club, then maybe he won't. But even then, I doubt he's the defending champion. Used to have his event there. I mean, he obviously loves the course. How many times did he win his event when he played there? I know it's a limited field, but always had great players. And I always really liked the course watching
it. From 2000 to 2013, Tiger won it 5 times.
So that was 13 years.
That was his World Challenge, which obviously is a limited field event.
Yeah, 16 players, but 16 of the best players in the world. I mean,
it was 16 or 18?
It used to be 16. Now it's 18.
Okay, they expanded it. Gotcha.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, it used to be 16, and it was invitation only. Yeah, it was lucrative thing, and for the longest time, it didn't have any world ranking points. A lot of to it is just kind of a money and but to benefit the Tiger Foundation type deal. And then once they realized that, oh hey, it was 16. Players now 18. Oh, hey, 20. The top 25 players in the world are playing this event. We should probably reward some points for if they do well. And if Tiger had been given points for for those 5 wins when he had down at Sherwood, he might have even been world number one longer than he was if that was even possible. But yeah, no, I think it's great that it's going back to Sherwood. We had mentioned that after we heard that the what term is going back? Shadow Creek. Gosh dang, just slipped my mind.
Shadow Creek is the
CJ.
Hold on, I've got in front
CJ
of me.
Cup.
Yep, CJ Cup.
CJ Cup going to Shadow Creek, and now the Zozo going to Sherwood.
That'll be 3 weeks in a row of primetime golf because the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open is October 8th through 11th. That's at TPC Summerlin in Vegas. The following week, we're going to have Shadow Creek, which is in Vegas for the CJ Cup. The following week, we will be at Sherwood. So that'll be 3 weeks in a row.
Is the HSBC after that, the week after?
The HSBC, I believe, is supposed to be, but they have not yet determined what they're going to be doing with the HSBC. And, of course, that's World Golf Championship event, so you would assume that they will find at a track over here, probably in California, and get it played.
Yeah, you would think so. That's the reason I asked, because you say there's 3 weeks of primetime golf. We could potentially get 4 primetime weeks if that were to be the case, because I believe there was rumors of Los Angeles Country Club and some other courses out there. That would be fabulous to host, especially since there's no fans out there. So really, you're just letting the best players in the world go out there and play your course. So I think it'd be great if we can get another one of those tournaments over here, just because of everything going on in the world. And that way it keeps the fire going, because I mean, HSBC, I mean, I would always watch it when it was in China. I mean, I would fall asleep before the coverage ended, because it ended at 6 a.m. but it would come on at noon or at midnight or 1 a.m. And especially when I was younger, I'd be up and watch it all the time. And it was always a great event, drawing a hell of a field. So, I mean, if they can get it at a really nice course in the state, especially California, West Coast, I don't see why I wouldn't draw another stellar field again. Maybe even Tiger would play this year.
Yeah, I think it'd be really cool to see it somewhere like Bandon or Pacific Dunes up in Oregon, just because it's something so different that we never see, because you can't get the crowds out there. You don't have to worry about crowds anyway. You're looking for a new course. Maybe logistically that doesn't work. Maybe they've talked to those courses. Maybe for whatever reason that doesn't work. Would you rather see it somewhere like LA Country Club, or would you rather see it in Oregon at Pacific Dunes, Bandon Dunes, somewhere like that?
Yeah, it's a tale of two stories, because like I forget what year it is, but there is a major coming up at Los Angeles Country Club, so it would be cool to kind of see the course a little bit.
Yeah,
see
what 24, it I think.
It's somewhere along there. I can look it up real quick. But nevertheless, I think... And we just saw Bandon Dunes for the USAM, so I would like to see the Pacific Dunes out of all of those, for my personal opinion. But at the same time, I would love to see Los Angeles Country Club 2023, Colby?
2023 U.S. Open.
Yep. Yeah, okay. Yep. So it's coming up around the corner. And if I had to choose between those three, I'd go Pacific Dunes, LACC, then Bandon Dunes, just because we just saw it at the U.S. Open. Or at the USAM, I mean.
Sorry. I'd probably go the same way, so that we can see Pacific, since we won't get to see it at all otherwise. We just saw Bandon. We're seeing L.A. in a few years. So I'd probably go Pacific as well, followed by L.A. Country Club. So, all right, Zozo moving to Sherwood the second to last week in October. Let's move on to the Tour Championship, Taylor. 30 players in the Tour Championship. DJ, of course, starting at 10 under. Let me just give a real quick rundown of where everybody's starting. We can just get that out of the way at the top. And whenever you're making your picks, whatever you're doing, DraftKings, one-and-done picks, just go to golfchannel.com. They've got a little tab on the side where all 30 players are going to start. You want to have that up whenever you're making your picks, because you want to know.
Yes, you do. Particularly for your one-and-done pulls, because that will impact where everyone finishes. DraftKings, you're still rewarded with your finish, but most of us dealt on birdies and eagles, pars, bogeys, that type of thing. So it's not as impactful as the one and done pool is, but at the same time, if you look at the DraftKings prices, they're so unorthodox at this event, just because it's a limited field and because of the scoring system, which makes it more of a very unique challenge to kind of get you a roster lined up. Because my ideal DraftKings lineup, Colby, has $400 remaining, and there's just no place to spend it.
Yeah, I think mine had $100 or $200 remaining, but I left it there. So DJ starting at 10 under, Rahm will be at 8, JT's at 7, at 6 under is Webb, 5 under PGA champion Colin Morikawa, 4 under stands Daniel Berger, Harris English, Bryson DeChambeau, Sungjae Im, and Hideki Matsuyama. At 3 under, we've got Brendan Todd, Rory McIlroy, last year's FedEx Cup champion and expecting father, Patrick Reed, Xander Schauffele, Sebastian Munoz. 2 under, Lanto Griffin, Scotty Scheffler, Joaquin Neiman, Tyrrell Hatton, and Tony Finau. Where he be now? 1 under, Kevin Kisner, Abraham Answer, OU's finest. Boomer for Abraham Answer. 1 Sooner and 1 Cowboy in the field this week. Ryan Palmer, Kevin Na, Mark Leishman also at 1 under. And then starting at even par, 10 shots back, we've got Cameron Smith, Victor Hovland, Go Pokes, Mac Hughes, Cameron Champ, and Billy Horschel. So that's our 30 guys and where they are all starting. We talked a lot yesterday about kind of the format, what we like about it, what we don't like about it. But, I mean, you see there, if any of the local guys, any of the in-state guys, Answer at 1 under or Hovland at even are going to have a good week, they're going to have to shoot 4 seriously low rounds.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it, especially with, I mean, just look at the names that are in the field, let alone who are ahead of them. And you're trying to chase DJ, who just shot 30 under how many ever weeks ago, and you automatically start 9 or 10 shots behind. It could be a little bit of a challenge, and it'll be interesting to see how these players adapt to the mindset. And that's why, like I mentioned yesterday in our recap show, that I think people who played in it last year, knowing that format, will have a slight advantage over it. There are, my ideal DraftKings lineup has a couple first timers, just because it's such a limited field. It's really hard to get, you know, everyone in there, especially with just 30 players. But at the same time, I think that with the format the way that it is, It'll have a little bit of an impact, especially when it comes down to, I think, the guys that finish between 5th and 10th, per se. So, you know, it'll impact a lot of money for those guys and for their lives and for anyone maybe in a one-and-done pool. But I don't think it'll have – I think, like I mentioned in our recap show, I think the player that plays the best this week will win the tournament, no matter if they're starting 9 or 10 strokes back. I don't see where, like, a Hovland or even a Billy Horschel, who is in my ideal DraftKings lineup, plays – outstandingly better than DJ or something like that and doesn't win. You know what I'm saying? I think that the guys that will play the best, you know, up until like a DeChambeau at 4 under, who's only 6 back with 72 holes left, I think has a really good chance to go out and make a move, or a Hideki at 4 under, somewhere around there. So I just think that if people can get out of their head really what their score is starting out and just go out there and just play the best golf, I think that they have the best chance at winning it, as opposed to thinking about where they're at and not taking it one shot at a time.
Yeah, I think the guys closer down to the bottom, the guys starting at even 1 under, 2 under, 3 under, I think those guys and their chances to win the golf tournament are largely dependent on what the 3 megastars at the top do, because DJ starting at 10, Rom starting at 8, and Justin Thomas is starting at 7. So, I mean, you know, obviously basic math, if DJ for 3 rounds shoots, or for 4 rounds shoots 14 under, and Victor Hovland for 4 rounds shoots 23 under, well, Victor Hovland can't win the golf tournament despite going super low. Now, that's obviously an extreme example. Those would be very low scores. Last year, Rory McIlroy started the tournament at 5 under par, which is where Colin Morikawa will start this week, in 5th position on the leaderboard. And Rory actually won the tournament by 4 shots last year going away. So we know that somebody like that has that kind of firepower. But also, we kind of talked about it yesterday, Rory McIlroy is just waiting on the phone call to leave the golf course and go be with his wife, Erica, for the birth of their first child, a baby girl. Congratulations once again to them. That is awesome. It's unbelievable. But that, for me, I think I won't be alone, and I don't think hardly anyone will be rostering the reigning FedEx Cup champion, because in a 30-man field with no cut, you're just taking a huge risk if you're rostering the one guy that we know is on WD alert.
Especially in a one-and-done pool where you only have one opportunity to use him. It would be, I mean, it is such a risk. I mean, obviously, he could go out there and do the same thing he did last year and run away with the tournament. He has that type of talent. It's just, it's a risk versus reward type of thing, just like you said, Colby. And so I think that definitely in one-and-done pools, 100%, I would not roster Rory just because of the risk of him leaving. And especially in DraftKings, because you're going to get 4 rounds out of every golfer, and he is by far the most likely to not play the 4 rounds, because as far as I know, there's not anyone else in the field who's on like serious injury alert or anything like that. So if anyone was not going to get the 4 rounds, and it would be Rory because of the birth of his baby girl. So I would steer away from Rory one of the few rare weeks that you do, and one of the rare occasions where you'd say Rory doesn't, you would not pick him. And it's not, even though he hasn't been playing particularly well, as we mentioned, and I think we kind of figured out.
Co-leader through 36 last week, but faded pretty hard on the weekend.
Yeah, and I think we're kind of seeing, like you mentioned in the recap show, that, I mean, that's wearing on him. I mean, you're not with the mom and the child. You don't have, you know, you can't see what's going on. I mean, it has to be taking a toll on him. And so I think that once his baby girl is born, as long as she's healthy and everything's going good, I think that's when we're going to start seeing peak Rory start to come back. I don't know if it'll be immediately afterwards. May take a couple tournaments, a couple months, but I don't think Rory's too far off. I think he's one baby girl away from being dominant again.
Yeah, I think by November 12th, he'll have his golf game about where he wants it. Yeah, if you catch my drift.
I think that's what he's trying to peak for. I mean, obviously, he would want to win the U.S. Open just as bad. I mean, you know.
That's in three weeks. Well, let me say that.
Maybe not as bad, because he already has one.
He already has one, yeah.
Corbin Grand Slam, so Masters probably is at the top of the pedestal there just for him, because he hasn't had it. It'd be like Spieth. If he had to choose one more major to win, he'd probably say PGA Championship. I mean, anyone who has the 3 majors would probably say the one that they don't have would be more important than the others. But at the same time, Rory would still want to win the U.S. Open, so hopefully his baby girl is born before then, no complications. He can go out there, and as long as everything's good, I think he'd be a great pick at Wingfoot as well. But that'll be a couple weeks away. But we'll get to him this week. And like I said, I'm just too much of a risk for me, Colby, especially with so many other great players in the field, and with the possibility of him leaving. I just don't see any reason why you would pick him or roster him in any format, or especially bet him.
Yeah, and also he's not starting at 10 under. It's not like he's leading the FedEx Cup. He's starting at 3 under, down with the likes of Brendan Todd, Patrick Reed, Xander Schauffele, Sebastian Sebastian Munoz. It's not like he's leading the tournament going in and you're taking a huge risk by not picking him and having him play well, because he would still have to go super low with all this other stuff going on in his life to win the golf tournament. So let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side. We've got a lot of picks to get to. The betting this week is going to be very interesting. Obviously, with the staggered start, we've got DJ at nearly even money on the betting odds, so trying to look for some value down the board is going to be a little bit tougher this week. DraftKings is much different. DJ is priced at more than 15K, whereas you get Mark Leishman all the way down at 5K on DraftKings. So there's a lot going on there. We'll probably have a little more fireworks in our one-and-done pools this week, as well as I would imagine anybody who has some dogs left are running them out this week with some big money on the line. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll give you all of our picks and keep it rolling along here as we get ready for the final event of the 2019-2020 PGA Tour season, the Tour Championship, starting this Friday. Our preview and our picks comes up next right here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back. Rolling along here on the 73rd hole, Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you, getting ready for the Tour Championship at Eastlake Golf Club this Friday through Monday, Labor Day finish. Of course, Eastlake has hosted this event now, how many years in a row? 15th consecutive year that the PGA Tour has played its Tour Championship at Eastlake Golf Club, home of the legendary Bobby Jones, of course, in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's given us some great moments over the years. We've got the shot that Bill Haas hit out of the water back in, 2012, maybe.
Something like OSU Cowboy Hunter Mahan.
Yeah. Golf. Yeah. Was that around the time it all started going wrong for Mahan?
Somewhere around there.
The Ryder Cup obviously took its toll.
It was somewhere around there. Yeah. And sad thing, I think he had, I'm not sure what exactly had going on. He had some type of disease or something like that going on. And then, horrible thing, but yeah, that was who he'd be in the playoff. It seems like it was forever ago, but I think it was somewhere around that time. I think you're right. But yeah, that was a phenomenal shot on the 17th hole there at, which is now the eighth hole. They switched the nines back then. Yep. And so what do you think about that, Colby? Do you like it finishing on the par five? I kind of like to finish it on the par three. Personally,
I prefer it finishing on the par five. I'm not a par three finisher guy. I don't know why. It's just, to me, I think the finishing hole should require more than one good swing. And on a par three, yes, and even if it's a long par three, and Eastlake has its long par threes, they've got three par threes of 210 yards or more at Eastlake. Even if it takes one good swing, I need more than that. I need a couple good swings. We saw it, obviously the epic moment a couple years ago with Tiger and Justin Rose coming up 18. Justin Rose, right of the green, chipping, trying to stay in front to win the FedEx Cup. And then Tiger, of course, going for his 80th PGA Tour victory, something a lot of people never thought we'd see again. They let the crowd swarm him. Obviously, one of the greatest moments that we've ever seen in golf, just from an emotion standpoint with Tiger. So we've had some pretty good moments at Eastlake. Over the years, it's been a golf course that has given us some good stuff. It's Bermuda everywhere but the fairways. Fairways are zoysia, tee boxes, rough, greens, all Bermuda grass. So I think that the greens will be rolling fast. The greens will be firm. They try to keep them around a 12 on the stamp is what I was reading. But fast, firm Bermuda, zoysia grass fairways. I like Eastlake. I think it's a good course to finish the season, and it's the known. You know what I mean? Like, you get the same thing every year at the Tour Championship, 30 guys going out at Eastlake. So I feel like we've kind of gotten used to it. It feels comfortable to me to have it played at the same place every year.
Yeah, I agree. I like Eastlake for sure. And you look at when they switch the nines, and a lot of people look at it as just the last hole, going from par three to par five. But you look at it, you can look at it from two perspectives. One, we mentioned it was the 17th hole, now the 8th hole that Bill Haas hit that shot on. That is a very demanding tee shot, one of the most demanding, maybe the most demanding on the whole course, and it being the 8th hole as opposed to 17th hole. But then on the flip side of that, used to be the 6th hole, now the 15th hole, the Island Green Part 3 adds for a little bit of excitement too. So there's the two flip sides, both of that coin. I think general overall having it for the course, I think the par 5 finishing hole is a better finishing hole. I'm not sure that, and the main reason I like par 3 finishing hole, I think it's a really cool concept. The reason I didn't like it so much at East Lake per se is that it was just a long par 3. So it's not really one that someone can birdie, or it's like a super risk reward. It was just a simple hit it out there middle of the green, or you're chipping and you're either going to make par or bogey if you mess up a chip or a bunker shot. And it was a very rarely birdie opportunity, so there really wasn't much volatility in the score. And I think that, and because that's what makes the back nine at Augusta so exciting, is because you can make an eagle on the par 5 or you can make a double just as easy. And it's the volatility of it. And I didn't
the par 3s, they obviously have a ton of character to them.
Of course, absolutely.
The best par 3s in the world aren't necessarily the longest. I'd say rarely are they the longest.
No, the best par 3s in the world are pretty much all under 160 yards.
Yeah, it's 12 at Augusta. It's 7 at Pebble.
8 at Troon.
Yep, at Troon. What,
17 Sawgrass.
17 Sawgrass. Yeah, I mean, those are the best par 3s in the world. And, I mean, guys aren't hitting anything more than, guys hit maybe, what, 8 irons into 12 at Augusta? Maybe 7 irons, depending on the wind, if they've got the tees as far back as they'll go?
Yeah, exactly. It's all dependent on wind. But, yeah, the yardage measurement will all be short because, it's like you said, it's all about the character and that. And it wasn't, like I said, I like the finishing hole being a par 3 concept. It was just the fact that the par 3, like I said, you're either going to make a 3 or a 4. There really wasn't anything else that you were going to make. And even the par 5 finishing hole, I think it's, while you can make eagles there, we haven't really seen a whole lot of them down the stretch to change the tournament. And we have seen a little bit of excitement. I don't know. I think it would have been nice if, obviously, I don't have the layout in front of me at East Lake, if they could have found a way to make like the old 17th hole and then go back to 9 to where that's now the 18th hole. That way you kind of have all that connecting. I'm sure they're just way too far apart, so you couldn't do that. So I'm kind of in between on the switch to the 9s. I think there's pros and cons to both of it. But I think generally for the casual viewer, I think they're more interested on the last hole, and when you can make an eagle, birdie, or a par, more than likely, making a bogey is going to be pretty hard on that hole. So you have a two shot difference, 3, 4, 5, as opposed to a par 3 where it's essentially 3 or 4. Because I don't think I've hardly seen any birdies on that hole.
Yeah, so East Lake, the scorecard reads 7,346 yards. It's a par 70, so 7,350 par 70. It's got a little bit of teeth to it, but course rolls hard and fast usually, so it doesn't really play as long as the number. It won't be the grind that we saw at Olympia Fields last year. The winning score typically is about 11 to 13 under. Last year, Rory shot 13, and of course, he started at 5, so he finished at 18 under. The teeth at East Lake is the par 4s. There are 5 par 4s that play over 450 yards, so some guys, where was I? I was looking earlier. It was like Bryson, Tony Finau. There are a couple others. I think Daniel Berger and then maybe one or two others ranked higher than everybody else in the rest of the field on long par fours this season. But this has also been a place, Taylor, where we've kind of seen horses for courses over the years. Rory has been great here. Xander has been great here. JT doesn't have a win here, but he's got 4 top tens here in 4 appearances, I believe. Billy Horschel has been great here. You mentioned he's in your ideal DraftKings lineup. He would be in mine if I didn't think that literally every single person in our pool was going to have him because he's priced at 5,700 because he's starting at 30th. I literally think I don't have him. And the only reason I don't is because I think everyone else in the entire pool is going to have him. So it's at some point it's about differentiating yourself, but I don't know what it is about East Lake, but it definitely has a horses for courses vibe.
Yeah. Just like you named, just mentioned the ones that stick out. Billy Horschel, like you said, I believe he's finished second, third, and seventh. I think he won here 1 year even. Let me pull it up real quick.
Yes, he did win here in 2014 when he won the Tour Championship.
Yes, correct. Yep.
Yeah, seventh, first, and then he finished second at the Tour Championship in 2018.
Yep, I remember that very vividly.
Cost you a lot of money, didn't it?
It cost me a decent amount of change, but that's a story for another day. Then, like you said, Schauffele here, so I'll read it off. He's finished the exact same, Kobe. He won back in 2017, seventh place finish 2018, then finished second last year in 2019. So the exact same as Horschel there, a first, a second, and a seventh. Pretty damn good, even in a 30-man field.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So let's go ahead and move on to our ideal DraftKings lineups, and we'll get those out here because I actually don't have either one of those guys. And the reason is I've got pretty top heavy here, and then I'm trying to go contrarian at the bottom because I feel like if I pick the same cheap guys everybody else picks, then I'm not going to be able to differentiate myself. And in a no-cut event, you know... Like Mark Leishman last week, obviously you don't want the guy who shoots 30 over, but it was a no-cut event, so it doesn't hurt you as much as it maybe would otherwise. Of course, 30 over kind of does because you lose a lot of points for all those bogeys. But anyway,
especially when everyone else in the tournament's not making as many bogeys.
Exactly. Why don't we start from the top this week? You get us started with your most expensive.
Let's do it. All right, so my most expensive this week is...
By the way, the most expensive on DraftKings this week is Dustin Johnson, $15,200.
$15,200. That's what we're talking about. So the most expensive is $15,200, and the cheapest guy is exactly $5,000.
$5,000,
yep. That's what Leishman is. So my most expensive guy is, we mentioned him earlier, a horses for courses guy. Hasn't won here, but a tremendous record, starting the tournament at 7-under, was leading the FedEx Cup before the playoffs started. Give me JT at 11,000.
Get off my JT.
Man, dude, hey, you said you didn't have the other two guys, so we'll have a little bit of differentiation here. But yeah, I just, and you know what? It's probably the kiss of death. Spoiler alert, I got him in my one and done pool too, because like you said, this is a big dog type of event. And
we got problems.
We got major problems.
So
JT, in his four starts here, he's finished third, seventh, second, and sixth. So
not bad. No
worse than seventh. So three of the guys that I have in my ideal DraftKings lineup have not finished worse than seventh at this tournament, and I bet more than likely that changes this year.
Yeah, you might be right. I love Justin Thomas. I'll give my two most expensive, and then we'll snake back to you. So Justin Thomas is one of my two most expensive at 11,900. And you know what? Give me the guy at 10 under. Give me the guy at 10 under who's playing better golf than anybody else in the world. Give me Dustin Johnson at 15,200. It's really expensive, and I think that might actually make his ownership a little bit lower because he's what, almost... Is he almost 3K more than the next guy? So John Rahm is at 12,700. So he's 2,500 more expensive than the next guy, and I think that might lower his ownership percentage because people are going to be scared to build the rest of their lineup so cheap if they roster DJ at 15,2. But I think he's got a great chance to win. He's playing the best golf in the world, and he's starting out with a lead. So I'm taking DJ at 15,2, and I'm taking Justin Thomas at 11,900. So when I say I'm going top heavy, I mean I'm going top heavy.
You went first and third in the value and DraftKings value. So yeah, you must have a lot of cheap guys down there filling out your roster.
27-1. I'm spending 27-1 on two guys.
So and keep in mind this is a 30-man field. So here's some of DJ's finishes just to read it off. So the first 3 years he played here, he finished 27th, 22nd, 23rd. So not very good. Then he started to learn the course a little bit, finished 10th, 5th, 5th, and then finished 6th, and then had a 17th finish 2017, finished 3rd back in 2018. Last year I think he was dealing with a little bit of injury, finished 29th. So but, barring last year's injury and the first three times he played here, not really knowing the course, DJ has a pretty good track record here, and he's starting with a two-shot lead.
Yeah, I mean, he's played here almost every year since 2009. He's never finished outside the top 29.
The only year he didn't play was when he took his hiatus in 2014 for whatever reasons.
Yes, because he just wanted to spend more time with his family.
Exactly.
I mean, everybody needs a little family time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. So, all right, your next two. Who you got? Second and third most expensive.
Second and third most expensive. All right, so I got him right here. Guy who I had... I think I had him last week, or was it 2 weeks ago when I had him? I mean, he's been pretty consistent throughout. No, I had him 2 weeks ago because last week he finished really high and I didn't have him good. Finished third last week, 29th the week before that, finished 22nd and 20th. Has a decent track record here, finished 9th last year and then 4th the year before, 26th before that, but then finished 5th back in 2016. Give me Hideki at 9,300. I just think that off of a third finish and
he's playing well,
and with his ball striking, I think that he's got a good chance. And he is,
when he's
I got it right
too.
Here, he is starting at 4-under. So, I mean, he's only six back right there. He's the exact same as someone starts. He's starting off with Daniel Berger, Harry English, DeChambeau, and Sungjae. So if like I mentioned earlier, DeChambeau has a talent to go out there, and Berger's really good on the long par fours. And but I just think just right there, Hideki's only six shots back. I don't think that's anything to shy away from. And then we had my third most expensive guy is someone that you mentioned earlier as a horses for courses is old Xander Schauffele at 8,900. No worse than seventh in three appearances here. Has been playing pretty well. I mean, I really don't see any reason not to pick him. Honestly, in my opinion, he's over the last few weeks. weeks too. He's finished pretty consistent, 25th, 25th, 10th, 6th, 13th, 14th, 20th, 64, but then since then finished third at the Charles Schwab. So only one finish outside the top 25 since the return of golf, Colby, from the Corona.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, he's playing well. Obviously, he loves the course. It's so tough because it's walking the line between this guy plays really well here. I feel like he's got to finish well, and I don't want to have the same guy that everybody else in my pool has. It really is a fine line. It's kind of the reason that I went super expensive and super cheap. And also in a 30-man field, it's really tough to differentiate yourself from guys you're playing against because everybody's rostering the same guys. It's a 30-man field.
There's only so many options.
Yeah, it's a 30-man field. We all do the same research. We all see the same names pop up. So it really is tough to differentiate yourself. But I am going to go ahead and do that by skipping everyone in the 10,000s, everyone in the 9,000s, everyone in the 8,000s, and everyone in the 7,000s.
Oh, my.
So that I can afford to roster DJ and JT. So my third most expensive at $6,800 is a guy who loves him some Bermuda grass. Show my boy Kevin Kisner some love. Kevin Kisner?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Copycat.
Oh, do you have Kisner?
I do.
Oh, I hate that. I really hate that a lot.
You know why? It's because I picked him in the one and done, and I'm always a week early. We're always a week early.
Yep. Third in 2017, ninth in 2019 in his two most recent starts here. And he's playing good golf here lately. I mean, he seems like he's really found something. 25th last week at the BMW, fourth the previous week at Northern Trust, and third the previous week at the Wyndham. So I like Kevin Kisner this week at $6,800. I think he's the best value I'm getting in that range. And then my fourth most expensive guy, Taylor, is at $5,500. And I actually have $200 remaining on salary. I could have afforded Billy Horschel at $5,700. I could have. I decided not to because I really, truly believe, and I'm going to go look on Friday when the tournament starts at everybody else in our pool. We play in a 19-man pool every week. And it wouldn't surprise me if 18 guys have Billy Horschel. So I'm just taking a flyer that Billy Horschel, because he's starting so far back, the emotional roller coaster of last week, maybe this is the one year he doesn't hit at Eastlake, and that gives me a boost over the rest of the field. Could totally go the opposite way. Billy Horschel could play well, and then 18 guys could have him, and I could not. But my fourth most expensive guy is Kevin Na. At $5,500. Kevin Na, you know, this course, I don't think it you don't have to have length to be successful at this course. Kevin Na, not great course history here. Twice so cheap. I'm taking a flyer on Kevin Na. This is totally me trying to think outside the box, probably outsmarting myself and picking this guy instead of Billy Horschel, but that's where I'm going.
It looks like you may be right on the outside, but yeah, it looks like you're kind of overthinking it. Last couple weeks, finished 51st last week, 39th the week before.
He's due, baby.
Missed the cut, the PGA, 35th at FedEx St. Jude. So not really on the best form, and like you said, Colby has not, in five appearances here, does not have a top 15 finish. Or I'm sorry, in six appearances, does not have a top 15 finish. So I am out on Kevin Na this week, but you go ahead and ride him all day.
Next Tuesday, I'll either look like the smartest guy in the world for not rostering the same guys who are always successful here, or the dumbest guy in the world for not rostering the same guys who are always successful.
It's
here.
Ultimate risk reward.
It's one or the other.
It's ultimate. So, do you got one more pick?
Let's put it this way. Out of 19 guys, I don't think I'm finishing ninth this week in DraftKings.
No, probably
not. I think I'm either going to finish first or 19th.
Probably so. Yeah.
So, if you like risk reward, I'm your guy. If not, Taylor, go ahead and provide us with your fourth and fifth
picks.
We'll go
a little bit. So we already mentioned one of them. He's not my fourth cheapest. He's my fifth cheapest in Kisner. And you said everything I was going to say, Colby, with the finishes and pretty good appearances here over the last 2 years. But I'm definitely rolling with Kisner as well. And I picked him last week in the one and done. And I'm always a week early on these picks. So I'm going to go ahead and go with him. But my fourth cheapest guy is someone who isn't starting off particularly high because he played, from the way I saw it, he had played the least amount of tournaments of anyone who got to Eastlake, but he's been playing really well. Give me Hatton at 7,000. Even. I mean, he's been playing so well all year. Obviously, won right before the hiatus at the Bay Hill Arnold Palmer event. But even other than that, finished 16th last week, 25th the week before. Didn't play so well 2 weeks before that. But then even before that, finished fourth at Rocket Mortgage and third at RBC Heritage. And for 7,000, kind of fit just really right into my lineup. So I'm going with that. And then I already mentioned Kisner. And then that only leaves one other person. So you didn't have to come back to me. And we already talked to him. I got Horschel 5,700, just like everyone else in our pool, and probably all over DraftKings will as well.
Yeah, he's, I mean, look, horses for courses. He's a great player at Eastlake, and he does have some momentum. I feel like one of two things can happen after the emotional roller coaster that he was on last week. It could wear him down to the point where he doesn't play this well this week, because last week was such a grind and such tough conditions to barely sneak in and having to watch the points and do all that. Or he could feel energized and revitalized by the fact that he barely snuck in, and he could just come out and light it up and shoot 15 under for four rounds and get himself, you know, close to potentially having a chance to win the tournament. So I certainly like the Billy Horschel pick. I'm not knocking the Billy Horschel pick just because I didn't take him. I'm just I'm going very much bang or bust this week with my pick. So at 5,400, my second cheapest, I'm going with Ryan Palmer, a guy who's had some really good finishes since the restart. He's got a top five and two more top tens. Eighth at Heritage, second at the Memorial, eighth at the Northern Trust 2 weeks ago for Ryan Palmer. He does have a top 10 here. He's only played here twice in 2010 and 2014. Finished 28th in 2010 and 7th in 2014. So for the value, I'm going to take Ryan Palmer at 5,400. And then my last guy, I'm going with a guy who's just kind of been sturdy lately. He's just kind of plotting along, and I'm hoping that he'll catch fire this week at 5,100, the second cheapest guy in the field. Give me Cam Smith, coming off a top 20 last week at the BMW, another top 20 the week before at the Northern Trust. Only played here once 2 years ago, finished 20th. So, okay, not great, not flashy, but give me Cam Smith, who I think will probably have low ownership as well. So I'm going very much risk-reward this week with DJ and JT at the top, which required me to get a little creative with my other four picks. I went Kisner, Knott, Palmer, and Cam Smith. So that's your boomer bust lineup for the week.
Yeah. Cam Smith, since the restart, as soon as he started, had missed three cuts in a row, and then has basically improved every week. He went 68th, 59th, 43rd, then he finished 18th at the Northern Trust, and then finished about the same 20th last week. So after not finishing in the top 40 for six events, has two back-to-back top 20 finishes. So it looks like he might have been able to find some form
In there. We're peaking at the right time. I like it.
Starting down at even par.
Yeah, starting out at even par. So
same as Billy Horschel.
He's about 10 back, if I did the math right. So
10 minus 0 is 0. Or a 10.
This is the 73rd hole. By the way, should have mentioned yesterday and totally forgot. You know what hole John Rahm won on Sunday, don't you?
73rd.
He won on the 73rd hole. Yeah. Good stuff,
John Rahm. That is great stuff.
Good stuff. Shout out to the show. I actually think John Rahm might be a listener.
I think he is.
I think it's entirely possible. And he could be, because you can listen anywhere. Apple, Google, Spotify. Doesn't matter. You can listen anywhere.
Anywhere in the country, the world even.
Yeah, anywhere in the world you can listen to the 73rd hole. And anywhere in the world, I actually don't know if that's true. But I know anywhere in the state of Oklahoma.
Oh, I know it's not true because of some countries. But
yeah, I know anywhere in the state of Oklahoma.
Any free country.
McCray Roofing will roll up, and McCray Roofing will get you taken care of. There is no doubt about that. McCray Roofing is a locally owned and operated roofing service company that is passionate about the quality of their roof creations. Their commitment to craft is what defines McCray Roofing and Exteriors. Call McCray Roofing today. 405-692-4000 or visit them online at mccrayroofing.com. Again, that's 405-692-4000 or online MCRAY, mccrayroofing.com. All right, Taylor, moving on now to our one and done pools. Our one and done pools in the podcast pool, I've got about a $200,000 lead. After last week, I had John Rahm pocket 1.7 for me, so that was pretty handy. And of course, in that pool, we have a lot of big names left because we started it after the restart. So I'll just go ahead and fire out my two that I'm using in the podcast pool, which are not the exact same two that I'm using in the actually, neither one is the same as what I'm using on our online one-and-done pool that is season-long. So for the sake of the podcast one-and-done pool this week, I am running out the leader, Dustin Johnson. Give me DJ.
Okay.
Running him out this week. Already used him on the website, so I can't use him on the website.
He's in the first event of the year, if I remember right.
I did. I think he got me a few hundred K, 400K.
I used him for a 57th or 105th or whatever it was at WGC Mexico.
That's pretty good with the lackluster season he's had.
Yeah. He really hadn't won much money besides that.
So give me DJ and Hideki. I think Hideki is a streaky player who has really found something over the last few weeks. And when Hideki gets hot, Hideki gets hot. Ask Firestone if Hideki can get hot. Not saying he's going to win the tournament, but I really think that Hideki will be in contention come weekend. So give me DJ and Hideki in the podcast, one and done.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with picking the leader who's won by 11 shots and then lost in a playoff last week. Hard to go against that. And then I got Hideki in my DraftKings lineup, so obviously I'm a big fan of that pick as well. And I had mentioned earlier one of my picks, Thomas, and he's in my DraftKings pool as well. And anytime I run both of them out in the same, it is the kiss of death. So hopefully JT can keep his form going. I mean, from what I've seen the last couple weeks, he's finished 25th, 49th, and 37th. So since his win at the St. Jude, hasn't really played particularly well, especially for his standards. But with the course record he has here and with the fact that he's starting at 7 under, while I don't think it'll impact the tournament as a whole and who will win the tournament, I think it'll at least get him a real high finish, a top five finish. And then the other guy I'm running out, Colby, I just have to ride the momentum. I mean, I normally don't pick a guy after the week after he wins, but I just think he had so much fire there at the end, and I think that he just played so well on the weekend that he's just going to ride the wave and want to go out and win the FedEx Cup. So give me John Rahm as my
going
other.
JT and Rahm.
JT and Rahm.
Definitely. You do that for podcast and website, both. Or just podcast?
Both. Man. Number two and number three in the world.
It's a lot of eggs. It's a lot of eggs in that basket.
I mean, when you consider both of them, yes, but because of the way our money breaks down in our one and done pools, this is, I believe it is either the exact most expensive event or the second most expensive behind the U.S. Open, because the Masters is just a little over 2 million. U.S. Open, I believe, is almost 2.2, and if you win this event by our math, I think it's 2.25 million that you would get, or something like that, or 2.5.
Yeah, the way our pool works, this is the money making event of the season.
Correct. Yes, and that is needless to say why I'm running out number two and number three in the world, both starting at 8 and 7 under. So go ahead and give me those propositions, and I'm gonna roll with it, and hopefully it works out in my favor.
You're gonna love who I'm running out on the website. Go ahead and read those two names off that are highlighted in blue for me.
My lord.
Go ahead and read them off for the listeners.
I don't want to.
You refuse to do that to these two guys.
It's the exact same. The exact same two picks.
Give me JT and Rahm, baby.
The exact same two picks.
And I didn't just make them.
No, you didn't.
They've already been picked. I've got the confirmation email earlier today.
You didn't get 2 weeks ago.
They were already made. And I'm doing the same thing this week that I did last week. I'm expanding where I have all my I'm not trying to put all my eggs in the same baskets. That way I can have more chances of being successful, especially at the top. So in one pool or another, I've got DJ, John Rahm, and JT, all the guys at the top. And then I've got some things sprinkled down along the way. So yeah, on the website, I'm running out John Rahm and Justin Thomas, trying to get a big money week as I am way back in the standings. I don't even know where I'm at, how far I'm back. But it's not good. It's not good.
Get a first and a second this week, and you'll move up.
Yes, that'll move me way up. I am, let's see, out of 10th place. I'm about $3.5 million out of 10th place right now, which would get you into cashing. So seems like a lot until you consider the fact that we've still got the Tour Championship, U.S. Open, and Masters left, and about seven more tour events mixed in. So if, like me, you're a ways back in your one and done pool, don't give up hope. Don't give up hope. Also, I hope you've still got some dogs left. Because if you're as far back as I am and you didn't save dogs, you got a problem.
Yeah, and you want the dogs to play well when you run them out. Because when you let the dogs out, they got to eat, 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 baby.
They got to eat, eat, eat. All right, let's do some best bets, shall we? And it's kind of tricky this week. I've really been racking my brain a little bit because, look, odds are, and maybe they don't, but odds are either DJ, John Rahm, or JT is going to win the tournament. I mean, those are the three best players in the world, and they're starting at 10, 8, and 7. So odds are one of those three guys are going to win the tournament, but you're just getting no value there whatsoever. DJ is plus 160, Rahm is plus 270, and JT is plus 550 in Vegas. So, gosh, those odds are terrible. When I bet golf, I like to get me some 15-1, some 20-1 odds, and I'm not getting it with any of these guys. So now I'm looking at where guys are starting and who I think could actually come from behind to win the tournament. Obviously, guy we know can do it is Rory, but Rory might withdraw from the tournament.
What are his odds at?
25-1.
That's a lot, and I think that's because of the withdrawal factor.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is, and I don't know that I'm willing to put my money there at 25-1 to expect him to come back the same way he did last year, do it 2 years in a row with everything else that he has going on. So now I have to ask myself, where's the rest of my value? Where's somebody who can go super low? We've got the long par fours, so you want somebody who can bring long irons in. We've got three par threes over 210. I like Morikawa at 20-1. I think that he's now had enough time to decompress since the PGA Championship win. He's had enough time to kind of get some of that out of his system, some of the bad golf he's played the last couple weeks. It's different whenever you step onto the course as a major champion, and it takes you a little while to bounce back. So maybe after a couple events, he'll be feeling better. I still don't know if we live in a world where we're going to be saying Colin Morikawa is the PGA Championship winner as well as the Tour Championship winner and the FedEx Cup champion this season. I still don't know if we live in that world, but at 20-1, you're getting pretty good value there. Another guy who can go low and is starting at 4 under par. I know he hasn't hit a lot of fairways lately, but Bryson DeChambeau is at 22-1 this week. He's starting 6 back, and I need guys who can go low. I need guys who can absolutely go low. So I've got 4 guys this week I'm running out. It's Morikawa at 20-1, DeChambeau at 22-1, and then the other two are going to be Xander, horses for courses, could go super low here, has played good golf. He has, over the past few years, been a little bit allergic to winning. He finds himself in the top 10 and top 5 a lot. He struggled to win, so I'm going to get him. And then the other guy who I said was streaky and is playing good golf right now and can go super low is Hideki. So the 4 guys I'm betting this week, purely because of value, these aren't, you know, if you ask me today who I think is going to win the tournament, I think it's going to be DJ Rahm or JT, but I have no value there. So for betting purposes, give me Morikawa, DeChambeau, Xander Schauffele, and Hideki Matsuyama, and let's hope that one of those four take it stupid low. You like any of those?
I like them all, in all honesty, especially for the odds. I think out of the big three that you mentioned there, Colby, I think really the only value because Rahm and DJ both had less than 3-1 odds, and I think that in a tournament of this caliber, so many great players, it's just hard to put any money on that, no matter how many out in front they're starting, especially when it's only 3 shots. I think out of those big three, I think plus 550 on JT would be a halfway solid bet, but I also have them in both, which is the kiss of death formats. But I think it at plus 550, lay down $100, get back 550, or lay down 10, get back 55. I don't think that would be those are fairly decent odds for a guy who's starting 3 back and has good success on this course. But I would it would be hard for me to bet either one of the other two guys being worse than 3-1 value. That's just hard to do in this type of tournament.
Yeah, you might have actually convinced me to put as much on JT as I'm putting on the other four, because then if JT does win, it would I wouldn't come out real high on the week, but it will at least cover my losses on the other four if JT does win, because he has good enough odds. If I bet DJ and Rahm, I'd have to bet a lot more on those guys to even cover my losses on the other four. And there's not enough value there for me. But JT at plus 550, I'm kind of in on. A lot of the previews that I was reading, guys really like Webb this week. Webb is the only guy in the field this week who did not play last week at the BMW. Said he wanted to get rested up for the Tour Championship. He is starting this week at 6 under par, multi-win season. He's had a great year. Are you in or out on Webb this week? I know just because we haven't talked about him doesn't mean we don't like him. We just haven't been able to fit him in to our rosters. I don't think either one of us has him available in 1 and done, and I didn't like his odds well enough at 11-1 to 1 to bet him, but I wanted to get your thoughts on him before we get out of here, because he's a guy that I know a lot of people like this week.
Yeah, so you look at his track record here. He's been kind of a hit or miss guy. He's just reading off. He's made it here. Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He has 7 starts since 2011, and I'll read them back from 2019 backwards. So he went 16th, 4th, 13th, 23rd, 4th, 5th, 22nd. So he's been really inside the top 5 or outside of the top 15 essentially almost every time. So he is a hit or miss guy, but with the way he's been playing before he rested, Colby, like you mentioned earlier, finished 6th at the Northern Trust, 3rd at Wyndham where he always plays well, 37th at the PGA, and 12th at the FedEx St. Jude. So I think I don't see any reason why Webb wouldn't play well, especially on the form that he is. I don't like him per se as much as some of the other guys, because like you said, if we did like him so much, we would have found some way to fit him in into our lineups. But I wouldn't be shocked if he's there on Sunday, and it would shock me more if he played horribly and was outside the top 15 than if he was inside the top 5.
Yeah, he's going out at 11K, which is, I mean, that's 1,700 more than what Hideki's going off at on DraftKings. That is 2,100 more than what Xander's going off at on DraftKings. And look, it wouldn't shock me if Webb went out and won the tournament this week, but I just can't that price.
And Webb's only starting 2 strokes higher than like Hideki or Daniel Berger, right? You know, so over 72 holes, that's nothing to put that much value into, even no matter how good Webb's playing. I mean, if you think Webb is going to play better than Hideki, then do it. But at the same time, don't look at it and say, oh, he's starting 2 strokes ahead, so he has a clear cut advantage. That's just not the case.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at DJ at 10 and then Scheffler or Finau at 2 under, okay, there's a big gap there. Guys are going to have to make up a lot of ground. I mean, Webb at 6 to Hideki at 4. I mean, that's a stroke on Thursday and a stroke on Saturday. Hideki's got to shoot 67 and have Webb shoot 68 on those 2 days, and they're right back there tied.
Well, and you made the point earlier in the show, and it's not obviously Rahm or JT could go out, or even Webb more could go out and shoot low, but DJ's been known to throw a big number out there at us. So, I mean, it's not out of the realm of question. He goes out and shoots a couple over in the first round, all of a sudden brings everyone else back into the tournament. Or it wouldn't shock me either if he went out and shot 8 or 9 under and we knew he was going to win after on Friday evening. Yeah. Either. So it's really hit or miss. But yeah, I think your point earlier is really dependent on those lower guys. Like I said, if they play good, they'll finish top 5 or 10 or whatever it may be. And so they'll make a good check. So it'll impact them on that aspect. But unless one of these top dogs, unless like DJ just falters and falls off the earth, I don't think that, I just don't think that this scoring breakdown is really going to impact that much. If you catch my drift.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's kind of a weird week. We're recording on Tuesday, which is early for us anyway, and then the tournament doesn't start until Friday, so we still have 2 full more days after today before we get the golf on Friday. Also, it'll be weird because you won't be able to wake up and turn on PGA Tour Live and watch golf. There's only 30 guys in the field, so they don't need to tee off at the crack of dawn in the morning. So it's a very different week. The schedule feels weird. My days feel like they're totally off. So anyway, we got fantasy football drafts later this week. We got golf this weekend. We got game 7 tomorrow. I would say this is a pretty great sports week. The only thing to make this sports week better is if Tiger were playing this weekend.
I would agree. And yeah, just like you said, we got all these sports coming back. And I think in all reality, we just seen it. All of us sports fans and really just fans of the world in general just need to sit back and look at where we were at 3 or 4 months ago and realize, oh shit, oh, we're all getting back together. And these things are pretty much going off with the NFL came out, what, they had 0.0012% or something like that. Other people test positive. And
negligible, yeah.
And the PGA Tour had a few cases there early, but since then we haven't heard a whole lot of news. And so it's just great that we have sports back and that we're at this point. We kind of prognosticated back then, as long as everything goes well, we're going to have a sports period where it's just like Christmas every week, and we're in that period. And hopefully before we close out the show, hopefully for us Thunder fans, we're able to watch them go and play they play the Lakers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That would be awesome. And hopefully Russell plays like he did last night.
Tour championship this week, NBA playoffs going on, college football starts next Saturday. If you've got $60, if you win some money on golf this week, then you can even watch OU play their opening game. So that's fun.
My Lord. Don't even get me started on that, but
we finally get sports.
And you got to pay for it.
And for the small price of $60, you can watch OU play its first game against Missouri State.
Yeah, and we're not we want to cancel a Tennessee game for Missouri State, but yeah, it's hopefully. And Spencer Rattler was now starting quarterback today, as a big shocker to all of us OU fans. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So, I'm sure it was a tight battle.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's what Lincoln was telling Mordecai and those other guys.
Yeah, I'm sure Mordecai was about as close to Rattler as Hovland is to DJ.
Probably so. Yeah. Yeah. Probably about 10 stroke difference.
Yeah. Pretty much. All right. Good stuff. A lot of fun. Everybody enjoy. You can either go moderate on DraftKings or you can do what I did and just go totally off the wall and hope that it hits. All right, a lot of fun. Enjoy the Tour Championship this weekend. We are not back next Monday because there will be golf playing next Monday, so we will not be back with you for a full week, and at that time we will recap the Tour Championship. We will know who has won the $15 million. We'll get you a preview for what will be just a terrible, terrible Safeway Open next week. And then we get Major Championship Golf once again. It is a great time for the game of golf. Thanks for listening once again. Back next week with more 73rd Hole.